For generations, family farms have been a way of life across the Upper Cumberland. But as agriculture changes, many farms and families are finding new ways to preserve their land and their legacy. Our guests today are Brian and Bridget Jones, owners of Mill Creek Farms in Cookeville. Now, it began as a family cattle operation, and it took on a whole new direction in 2021 when Bridget fulfilled a lifelong dream of bringing Highland cattle to the farm. And those distinctive shaggy-haired cattle, well, they didn't just become another breed, they became an inspiration for a new chapter at Mill Creek Farms. And Bridget and Brian are joining us. Thank you so much for being here. So how did your family's farming story begin? Was it a, whose family was farming? Brian, okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, that would be from my side. You know, my grandfather ran a dairy farm out in the area where we're at. You know, that's just kind of the norm back, you know, in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. So my parents, my dad specifically worked on that farm, you know, as a young adult, and that was just kind of what they did to make a living. You know, they was just poor country farmers. And growing up, dad always had cattle, you know, and still does to this day. You know, he's always raised beef cattle, so to speak. We've never operated a dairy since me and him have been adults. So, you know, Bridget liked what she's seen with that, but just kind of like you said, kind of wanted her own spin with that to go alongside, kind of have her own breed, her own thing. So that's where the Highlands come from. You know, we still do the Angus cattle. We've got, you know, 50, 60 black Angus cattle that we raise for market beef every year. And then the opposite side of the farm, we raise the ugly cows.
I think so, you not think they're ugly. Pretty. And that's what really drew me to them. They're just majestic when you look at them. I mean, when you think of Scotland, you think of these Highland cows. And I don't think for years we even knew they were in the States. And when we ran across them, I was just like, that's the cow I want to have on our farm.
So all the foundation was in place, you know, all the land, the equipment, you know, everything we needed to make this happen. It really wasn't that much different. It was just, you know, kind of heading down a different path and utilizing them in a different way than, you know, what we had traditionally thought. So the mechanics was there, but the mindset's completely different.
I think for him growing up on a farm, he didn't see the joy in cattle that I saw. I grew up in the country, but not with cattle. So to me, the cows brought a different kind of joy. Even the Angus, you know, we would go work cattle and it's all business for the guys. And I'm talking to number 37 and telling her how, you know, she's going to get through the day when we're vaccinating or pulling a calf. So I saw a different side. So as the kids were headed to college, I wanted something to pour my extra time into, and cattle was what we do. So it was just natural to bring a prettier version of cattle to the farm.
You mentioned that it was a dream, mm-hmm. that having this specific mm-hmm. cow, where was that dream born?
It was really just seeing a cow at some point and just thinking, that is the prettiest cow I've ever saw. And then, like I said, I didn't really realize that they thrived in the United States for quite some time. And when I guess it was 2020 when I started diving down, what kind of breed do I want to go into? I kept circling back to these guys and I was like, this is what I want. And he was like, this is why it's not going to work in Tennessee. This is why it's not going to work here. And the more we researched and the more we learned, we realized they could thrive in Tennessee. It just needed a little bit more, I guess, engineering and love than the Angus do to be able to thrive in this environment.
Brian and Bridget Jones, Mill Creek Farms, join us, and the Highland Cow Adventure that you have gone on. So you said the facilities, they were already in place. They already were functional and operational. So how did you transition from what you were doing into incorporating the Highland cows into what Mill Creek Farms is today?
Well, we started with two, and it was a journey. First, I was just going to have a couple cows.
Pets?
Pets, per se.
But cow dogs.
But of course, they had to be functional pets, because the business and cattle mindset he has is everything that lives on the farm has to have a purpose. So we were going to have a couple girls, possibly borrow a bull, keep a very small herd, because we wanted to keep them separate from the Angus. So we put these guys on some land that we really didn't farm. It was just kind of an extra big front yard we had. And then as we got to learn about them and love them, we decided to kind of grow our herd. So now I think we have 17.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. In the beginning, it was just a way for me to relax, de-stress after work, because I am a nurse by trade. And we quickly realized that it was a non-profitable farm. So his side was like, you're spending a lot of money on cattle that you're not selling.
That you're not out here talking to and petting and
they still
and
eat naming just the same.
Yes, yeah. They're not getting turned into beef.
We're not eating them. So, you're investing. We need a ROI here. We need a return on the investment.
He was like, you're going broke, honey. We realized there were so many people, especially in the community, that loved cattle. Not just Highlands, but all cattle. And then we seen there was a great market for agritourism. Didn't know a lot about agritourism until we had dipped our toes into it. And it's been like a really fun adventure to have some return on your investment without selling for beef.
Brian, when Bridget suggested that she was going to offset the cost of her hobby, somehow, what did you think? How did you think she was going to manage to make that happen?
I'm more of a realist about things. I have to see it. So to me, the idea was a little bit ludicrous, you know, that people would want to come to the farm, you know, to visit these animals. You know, obviously that mindset's changed over time, and you get to see the joy that other people get by, you know, witnessing something that's not the norm. So I'm very skeptical at first, absolutely. And she has a way of dreaming up things, you know, that sometimes come into reality a little quicker than I would realize, you know, and I'm more of a numbers and paper and factual type person. So it took a lot of persuading, especially to let somebody, you know, people come to the farm, you know, because this is where we live. This is our space, you know, and you're inviting the public in to look at that, you know, so it took a little convincing.
I think that's been the hardest part is, most people respect our boundaries, but you get people who do not respect your boundaries. You know, we've put up automated gates, security systems. You would get people just climbing on your fences in the middle of the day. So it's took a lot of time to get used to that, but we've kind of pushed the public back by putting up other boundaries. But most people are great. Most people don't just stop by on a Wednesday afternoon and knock on the door, but a few do.
Now, when you brought that first Highland home in 2021, do you remember that day?
Oh, yep. Yes. We had actually went to an auction, the actual AHC Highland show, the month before, and determined to come home with a couple animals, came home with nothing, an empty trailer and a tearful wife. But Brian had an interest spark that there actually was a business. He thought that nobody would want a fluffy cow with horns because as a beef farmer, he has no desire for a fluffy cow with horns.
An ornamental.
No other cattle farmer in Putnam County wants a fluffy cow with horns. So to him, he saw, okay, there actually is a business for this. It's just a different side of the cattle business. We met some connections and brought home a cow-calf pair. And it was really exciting, but it was very overwhelming at the same time.
Yeah.
What were some of the biggest differences, Brian, between raising Angus beef cattle, what you're used to, and the Highland cattle? Well, was it, besides wrapping your mind around, I can't believe that you're just an ornamental beast in my field.
Well, right, and I still won't ever have that mindset. They have to have a purpose, you know, and if times got rough, we'll still eat one, you know. I mean,
there is a pecking order.
The biggest, you know, I guess obstacle at first until at least you understand the animals and each one of them and their distinct personality is being around something that's got 3 foot of horns out front. You know, that's just a no-no in this area. We don't have horned cattle in this area. Most of the local processing places don't have horned cattle. So you get in the field with something that's got 36 to 40 inches of weapons out front and you don't know their temperament. It's a little intimidating at first.
Hence he always has to try out the new cow first. So, you know, if we have a new cow we bring in and she might be a little bit ornery, I always send him in first to make sure if he might get whacked and not me.
Yeah. You know.
Have you ever been whacked?
Well, I mean, not in a evil way. I mean, they can just be, if they're around and you're doing something, you know.
They might knock you.
They're very
nosy. None ever charged you.
No, but, you know, if a fly bites them or something, they just swing their head, you know, they're still spinning those things around. But yeah, we've all been hit and bruised and banged with them, and you know, and that's a concern we share with people when they come. You know, they're not mean, they're not going to chase you, and they're not going to do this, but they're still big 1500 pound worth of horns flying around. But no, from either side of that, if we ever have anything that would charge us, so to speak, or be unruly, it doesn't stay long.
Now, we've actually brought a few in that are great cattle, but they don't fit our mindset because I'm in the pasture daily, so I don't want anything that I have to worry about its temperament, if it's unpredictable. And that's with our Angus, too. If we have an Angus that's an ill mama, she leaves really quick.
Yeah.
How involved is the rest of the family in the operation?
More than they want to be, probably. So we have three young adult kids who are all still somewhat tied to the farm. Our oldest is home for the summer, but she is fixing to start her third year at UT Vet School. And so she wants to do large animals. So when she's home and on her break, she's very active in the herd. Our middle child actually is kind of my farm manager. He does probably almost everything with me as far as the agritourism side. He is a senior at Tennessee Tech, so he does everything on the weekends, and it's kind of his part-time job. Our third one has a job that's off the farm, but he helps more with the hay and that type of stuff.
So it is a family business in Cookeville where you can see Highland cows. It's Mill Creek Farms. Brian and Bridget Jones are the owners and operators, and it's more than cattle. And we will explore how it's more than cattle and how the business and operations came to be what it is today, and how it looks a little different than the family farms that Brian grew up with and the cattle that he grew up with. Mill Creek Farms in Cookeville with Brian and Bridget Jones. It's more than just a family farm. Generations of cattle experience in the room, but the Highland cow is a little unique. As Brian said, it's not necessarily for beef. It's not for production. A lot of people just want to look at them, pet them. But for somebody who's never, Bridget, somebody who's never seen a Highland cow in person, describe what makes them so unique.
I think the biggest part is, one, they're pretty. So I think you're just drawn to anything pretty. Two, they do have unique personalities. And I always say, I think every cow probably has a personality, but most beef cattle farmers are not going to spend time with their cows to learn which one likes which. We have some girls that are very, very social. So I think they win over their audience really quickly, and they're all very food motivated. So if you walk up to the fence,
like a lot of my friends,
So you walk up to the fence with a bucket, they think there's some treats in there and they're going to mosey over to kind of see what's going on. They really do enjoy human interaction. So they're not nowhere like a dog. And they are actually for beef. They're a different kind of beef. So they're going to be a leaner, healthier beef than your Angus beef. But for us, we tend to market more for breeding stock and just the agritourism aspect of it. They really just they're super friendly, aren't they?
It is. It's a different spin, you know. We get in the field with our beef cattle and they look at you from a distance and they might, you know, be somewhat inquisitive. And we get in the field with these and they run up to you like, hey, what's going on? You know, you're out here to see me. You know, I'd take a little of that brushing right now if you want to give me a little comb.
And they're very spoiled and pampered. So they learn really quickly that if they see you, you have treats, a brush, something that's going to make their day better.
They've been described sometimes as gentle giants. Is that accurate?
For the most part. Like you said earlier, they're still cattle, and that's the biggest thing we try to tell new farms that reach out to purchase cattle or people that come to visit. At the end of the day, they're cattle, and cattle are never going to be as tame as a horse or a dog, but for the most part, they are gentle. They are very big. They get a rap of being a mini breed. And in reality, the females are anywhere from 900 to 1,500 pounds. So they're quite large, but they usually don't have a mean bone in their body.
You know, but it's still, you know, even when we have people out, you know, we have two bulls that are typically, you know, just as friendly as anybody, but they're still young men at times, and and they act like young men, you know. So they're still wild animals, you know, with all due respect to them.
You mentioned that they can be used for beef. Mm-hmm. You don't produce them for beef, though if times got hard, Brian said we would cut one up.
Absolutely. I've got my first one picked out.
I've been trying. So I would love to grow off Angus beef right now. I would love to do a Highland Angus cross just so it would be a little something different. The biggest reason we don't do beef for Highlands here, one, we really love them, and we do breeding stock, and two, it takes about 4 years to develop a Highland steer for beef. So that's a large investment to keep that animal tied up on your farm, and we really just don't have the space to grow it.
So
comparatively, your Angus that you're going to send to slaughter, how long did it grow before you sent it?
18 months.
Big difference.
Yeah, so it ties up a spot where you can't have another cow.
More than half the time.
Yeah.
And so you don't just have the facility there for people to come and visit. Mm-hmm. You also are producing these Highland cows to sell to other farmers.
Yes.
So how do you get in the loop of selling Highland cows?
So when we got into them, we knew we would have a small herd just for the space that we have because we want to keep our Angus production up and going. So we knew we would top out at around 15 moms. So we ended up going with registered stock so we could have that return on investment like we talked. We dabbled a little bit in showing enough to realize we are not cattle show people. And we decided to go with some really great genetics that preserve the breed and have a lot of breeding stock. So we've started a lot of farms. We've had cattle as far as Oklahoma. We have a couple that stayed here in Tennessee. We're delivering.
Yeah. The biggest thing is, you know, is like you said, keeping the genetics up and making that genetics and that combination of genetics something that's sought after. You know, this is not just an ordinary Highland. This is a calf out of such and such and such and such. You know, his great grandpa was just something special, you know. So we try to go down that road to
no different premium. than horse racing.
Yeah, same
the
thing.
Pedigrees, same the thing. Same kind of pedigree.
Keeping that pedigree high.
Uh-huh. But we really like the true Scottish look, I think. There's a lot of, like a Angus cattle, you know, you'll have a farmer who likes this look or this look. We're very much phenotype lookers. So I really like that just true on the hills of Scotland look. And we've tried to put that in our herd a lot, I think.
Bridget and Brian Jones with Mill Creek Farms in Cookeville. Now, You talked a little before about how Bridget was wasting money, and so you insisted that she was just dumping money into her hobby. And so how did it actually turn from a hobby where you were spending money to an agritourism? How did you make that decision and that jump to open the farm to visitors?
I think it really sparked from Visit Cookeville actually came out to the farm. And I think I had never heard of agritourism before they came. They came out and did a little piece on us and kind of gave us a taste of, hey, look at these avenues. We partnered with the Art Jam, I think, for our first event. And like I said, I'm a nurse by nature, so I'm a very much a people person. It was more fun than I could have imagined. He was very resistant, like we said, for somebody to come out to the house, strangers, because our house is relatively very close to our farm. And we just slowly started kind of dabbling in it. To the point it was I worked a full-time job and we ran a full-time agritourism business for 3 years, I think it was. I've stepped back from nursing for a little bit, but we try to do everything by appointment only. We do lots of private tours because we want you to truly get a taste of Tennessee, a taste of cattle farms, and a taste of Highland. So we don't want it to be just somewhere you show up and you buy a ticket and you enter. It's everything is planned and orchestrated for your best experience on the farm.
What have you guys learned about people through the farm tours? Brian's covering up his microphone.
That's a hard one because, I mean, I think in general most people are great. Working in healthcare, you get a taste of people every day. We are both very grounded in customer service, so I think that helps. But when I stop doing agritourism, it won't be because of the cows.
It all in all, you know, very seldom is there ever an issue. But, you know, when you're doing this year on and year out, there's things going to arise that you didn't plan on. But for the most part, it's been a very, you know, pleasant, easy experience. Mm-hmm. And everybody's very welcoming. They're very respectful. And, you know, there's absolutely no problems.
We get people from all over. We've had, I think as far as China, we had Canada last weekend, so I'm just blown away sometimes, and I just stand in front of my little map that has everybody's pen, and I'm so joyful and thankful. And rarely, I'm going to say 1 in 1,000 will give you a headache. And it's usually something because they don't know. People will be like, well, can we not get in the pasture with the cows, you know? Can we not go out there and, like, hug your bull? And I'm like, well, no, because that would be unsafe, and, I mean, a liability if you was to get hurt. But all in all, people, I think the people are why we keep doing it, because you will get people who will get out of their car and shed tears when they see these cows. and it's amazing to me. He's still very skeptical of that. But
are you seeing more and more here in the Upper Cumberland as more people move to the area, more people who haven't had an agricultural background, more people that don't share Brian's mm-hmm. life experience of raising for years mm-hmm. going through this, and now your life experience as well? Are you seeing more and more people who want to experience that?
Yes. I think after COVID, I think people really wanted to reconnect with nature and outdoors and wanted to basically have their own homestead. To me, I'm always really, really excited when people who've never had a farm want to get into farming. And I think Highlands are kind of like the gateway animal because people, you know, they like didn't really want an Angus cow because it kind of looks just regular, not pizzazzy. And they see these Highlands and they're really drawn to it. I actually do a lot of mentorship for new farms. I think I have 16 in my 2026 program. So we tell them how to basically start a cattle farm from ground up, and we use a lot of old school knowledge. You know, I wouldn't know what to feed a cow every day, or I wouldn't know what vaccines to give, but Brian knows all of that, and his family farm's kind of tailored it through the years.
It's a chance for you to see Highland cows. It's Mill Creek Farms with Bridget and Brian Jones. Mill Creek Farms in Cookeville is a place where you can go and visit Highland cows. Brian and Bridget Jones join us. It's agritourism, and something that you had not heard of before a visit from Visit Cookeville, correct. And you learned a little about agritourism. Why do you think that people, when they come to visit you to explore what Mill Creek Farms has to offer, why do you think people leave with a greater appreciation for farming than when they got there?
Oh, let me think. Well, I think we try to be as transparent with farming as it is. It is definitely a labor of love. It is the greatest life you can have living on a farm, but it comes with a lot of sacrifices. Early mornings, late night, nursing sick calves, losses. So we try to tell them all the good stuff about it, but also the reality that it's not for everybody. So I think they like the taste of the farm life, so they get to learn about it, pet a cute cow, take a selfie, but they don't actually have to
participate.
Because we get a lot of people that come, 6-7 times a year, the same people. And we know them by name. We get Christmas cards. They're just, one's going to do a gender reveal of their upcoming baby. I'm trying to get her to name it after a cow. But I think they really feel like they're part of the farm.
Yeah.
We try to be as welcoming as we can and meet everybody with whatever their desire is. So when they show up, we want to know, what are you here for? Maybe it's to start a farm. Maybe it's to get a selfie for Instagram. And we try to meet those needs.
If somebody's never visited, what do they need to do? What would you tell them first? Before you ever come, this is what you need to know.
So if you go to our website, which is millcreekfarms-tn.com, it has a link to our booking site. It has all of our events, photo sessions, paintings with the art jam, and you can kind of pick out whatever's going to work for you best, buy you some tickets, and you'll get some emails that tell you what to expect before you arrive. We also do all-year private tours, so they reach out to us by email or on our website, and if they have family in town, we book it based on their availability.
The best thing, you know, about that, you know, as far as what they're going to expect, everyone's different. You know, these are, again, wild cows. You know, we're going to have some of the younger ones pulled out that's got up close and personal interaction. And there's days that the whole herd's going to come up and see what's going on. And other days, like if we was to go out there today and it 100 degrees, they're going to wave from a distance and go, I don't think so. So every you never know exactly what you're going to expect, you know, or what you're going to see or which ones you're going to get to see exactly, just depending on the temperament.
Yeah, because so I might have it planned that you're going to see Ruby and Rocky today, and I go put Ruby up, and Ruby's being a heifer, and then you get Rosie and Anthem. So, you know, because they do have a personality, especially the heifers. Once they get a year old, you just don't know what you're going to get that day.
Teenagers.
So, yes.
Teenagers, there you go.
And we have people that are like, we really want to see this cow, you know. So, like, Lola is a celebrity, I think, on social media. So, everybody wants to see Lola. Lola is a diva, and she does not like the heat. So, you're not going to see Lola in the summer. But you get to see Rosie, her daughter. And usually people are happy with that.
Now, let's talk a little about the future. We're talking about the heat right now, mm-hmm. but these fluffy, fuzzy cows, it seems like, would make some awfully cute snow pictures.
Yes, snow. I mean, if you are a cold-natured person and you can come in January, the cows are so fun in the winter.
Yeah, they love it.
They love it. To me, the favorite time to visit is anywhere from September to, I would say, March. After that, it's still fun. It's still great, but you get a different side of the cattle. The best thing about the cows when you come right now, we only do early morning and late visits in the summer. You can cuddle all you want because they are hot and they are not going to get up and try to nudge you over. Where in the wintertime, they are very feisty. So you're going to get a little bit more love taps from the even the 6 months olds that are out because they are a little more feisty and feeling frisky.
Well, they're less agitated. Mm-hmm. They're not hot. They don't have flies swarming around. Think mm-hmm. of think of the conditions. They are their temperaments would obviously be different because mm-hmm. their moods are going to change dependent on the environment around them. Mm-hmm.
And the wintertime's great because that's when we try to calve. So we start calving in September to December for the majority of the herd. So and everybody wants to see a baby.
Now, is agritourism, do you see, you provide some mentorship to other mm-hmm. farms. Are you seeing other farms not just wanting to get into raising the Highlands or the Angus for beef production or whatnot? Are you seeing more and more people come to you for advice about agritourism?
Oh, yes. I think Highlands are leading the agritourism business right now.
Sure.
And I think a lot of it is people say, oh, if I buy this cow, I'm going to have an agritourism business and I'm going to get rich. To me, agritourism made it a way that we could cover our investment for the cattle because these cows eat better than our Angus. They get better minerals than our Angus. They are bougie cattle. But I do think that Highlands have got a lot of people, not just in the farming, but in the whole agritourism business. And I think that's great for the breed. Highlands, we raise only registered Highlands, but the breed has, I would say, quadrupled in the last couple of years. It's a growing breed, and I think everybody that raises them are so excited for it. But every day I open up social media and there's a new farm dabbling in it.
Mill Creek Farms, Cookeville with Brian and Bridget Jones, their Highland cow adventure. And Brian, you were skeptical, we know, about the Highlands. What surprised you most about opening the farm to visitors and their reaction to the Highlands?
Well, you know, it's a mindset thing. When you grew up around all kinds of different animals, especially cows and things, you can't understand exactly the excitement you see from other people that's never experienced that, you know, that's never been up close to anything, let alone a cow or a Highland cow. So the uniqueness of that was, you know, different than anything I could have dreamt of.
What's the experience been like raising your children? You were raised in an environment where you were raising cattle. What do you think that this environment of just the farm life, not necessarily the Highlands specifically, but just the this lifestyle, what do you think that's given to your children?
I think it teaches work ethic more than anything.
Yeah, and we tried to instill that from the beginning, even well before Mill Creek Farms and well before the Highlands. You know, we raised beef for ourselves, you know, outside of our herd beef that, you know, go to market. We would get, you know, some bottle calves from the local dairies just to make the kids get up and bottle feed a cow before they went to school. Go get the eggs before you went to school. You know, don't forget to clean the barn out this evening. Just trying to instill some old school work ethic that seems like a lot of young people don't have anymore. You know, so
they knew when it was hay cutting season that no matter when it was, everything else
stopped.
If it was time to cut hay, you're at the farm to cut hay. And that's still as an adult, unless they have an actual paying job that's taking them away from the farm. If we're cutting hay, everything else goes to the side and you better be there to help.
I know when you all first married and when mm-hmm. you first started your farm lives together, you never, ever, ever, ever imagined being where you are today in 2026.
Oh, no, definitely not. I think the biggest thing when we started dating and when we got married, Brian's mom, she always cooks breakfast when we work the cattle. So the biggest thing was, you know, the women cook the breakfast, the men work the cattle, and I was drawn to going and watch work the cattle. Of course, my healthcare background just really drawed me to that, and I was just fascinated from the first time I saw him pull a calf or give vaccines. That was the part I wanted to do. I wanted to get down and dirty with them instead of being in the house. But I think it's blossomed into more than we could imagine. But the biggest thing is beef farmers, and especially in the Upper Cumberland, you don't have enough land to make a profit selling beef unless you have a full-time job too. So I really wanted to have a way that if our kids wanted to preserve our farm one day, you could have a way that you could actually farm for a living without having to balance two full-time jobs, raising kids, and then also raising a herd of cattle, because there just isn't enough time in the day anymore.
You know, in Tennessee, we're losing farmland, selling it to developers at the rate of about 254 acres a day.
Oh, I know, because I watch it every day, and I try to we bid on a ton of farmland that's anywhere in Putnam County, and you're quickly outbid as a farmer. So to us, I would love to see our farm preserved as a farm, but I think in today's world, you have to think outside the box. Just raising, you know, 40, 50 steers a year isn't going to be able to pay the bills with the rising cost.
Even with the rising cost, even with the complications, even with the work associated with farm life and farm work, where do you see Mill Creek Farms 5 years from now?
Hopefully the same as it is. I think that would be my goal. My goal would be for Brian to be retired from his real job by then. We're dabbling some ideas how to make the Angus side of it a different approach, just thinking outside the box on that too. But I definitely see it still being a very functioning family farm.
Yep. Yeah, that's the idea, to try to keep everything preserved and just look at new ideas. You know, I think if you don't change with the times a little bit, you're destined to fail.
But diversifying. So yep. What advice do you give other farmers, other folks who want to farm, about the necessity to diversify?
Be open-minded is the biggest thing. And I struggle with that myself. You know, we've always done this. We've always done that. We've always done that. And always doesn't always work. You know, I think you've got to be open to listening to new ideas and new strategies and going down different avenues than just because we've always did it that way, you know.
I think another is being very frugal. I mean, you don't need a brand new tractor to be a farmer. We have a big pile of T-posts that are sometimes we have to straighten with the backhoe before we use them. We reuse every piece of electric wire. I mean, it's so aggravating to put up a new fence and you have old fencing, but save every dime you can, and you don't need big fancy stuff. I mean, if you're going to have a family farm, you've got to learn to MacGyver everything together. He can fix everything. That is the brilliant part of being a farmer.
Well, it's cliche, but according to Bridget and Brian Jones and a lot of other folks, teamwork does make the dream work. Thank you so much for being here today, being our guest, and helping us explore Mill Creek Farms in Cookeville, where folks can enjoy your work and your Highland cows.